Well, that's some cool intro music. Thank you, Dave. We are here with our good friend Jesse Feiler. He is with us this morning to discuss issues involving internet security and the secrets of hacking. Jesse is a developer, consultant, and author specializing in Apple technologies. He's creator of Minutes Machine for iPad, the meeting management app, and the Saranac River Trail app, a guide to the trail that includes location-based updates as well as social media tools. His books include Swift for Dummies, which is out soon, right?
In a matter of, it's being printed now.
All right, being printed now. So go order your copy. And iOS App Development for Dummies. He can be reached at northcountryconsulting.com. Jesse Feiler, welcome. Very nice to have you with us as always.
Good to be here.
All right. I got an email from you over the weekend, and you said I'm concerned about all of this talk about hacking and security and privacy and such. So I will simply ask you before we dive into this big subject of what brought on your concern, do you think?
I think occasionally I read a newspaper and listen to WAMC news and discussions, and you all are terrifying me. There's this big sign up on the wall, please make Jesse upset and worried.
See, no, that was not our intention. We didn't mean to paint that sign. But yet, that is the result. Now, I would think if you, of all people, would say, well, that you'd be the level-headed one of saying, I know this issue. I'm not worried.
Well, I think I am being level-headed.
Okay.
But I am worried.
All right.
And I'm worried for two reasons, two main reasons. And the first one is that I think most people are not worried, and because when you start talking about technology, people tune out.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yes.
And so for the people who have not switched the station at the moment, thank you for staying with us, even though we're going to talk about technology. No, it really is a serious issue. And there are serious things going on, and I've been reading some rather interesting, in a, I guess, good way, because we should know about this, some interesting books about what's going on, and I put them on the website because there are really four things that are going on in the general category of hacking and all this stuff.
All right.
And people confuse them or get them mixed up, and I think they're quite separate. And the four things are, there's cybercrime.
Right.
Where people are going to steal things. You know, basically it's stealing things. There's cyber espionage, which is espionage done in cyberspace. Then there are the two really big ones, cyber terror and cyber war. And those exist.
Yes.
There's one of the books that I listed is called At War, At Sign War by Shane Harris. And it's a look back at cyber war that's been happening, sort of while we were focusing on other things. And then the cyber terror is going on. And they're all mixed together, but there are four separate aspects to it. And what they have in common is that most of the ones that we know about have apparently been remarkably easy to pull off, but they have, in some cases, required an enormous amount of skill, but they, somewhere along the line, took advantage of vulnerabilities, which need not have occurred. So in the case of cybercrime and cyber warfare and all of these things, A key element that I see in common is the fact that people have made it possible by doing sort of the things like not locking their doors. Mm-hmm. And people really have to worry about this. And I posted also a list of 10 steps that people can take or not take, as the case may be, to protect themselves against these problems. And if we have the time, we can go down the list of 10 steps and demolish every single one of them.
All right. This is what I've been looking forward to this ever since you you wrote me over the weekend. I was like knee-deep in a football game, and like this email came in. I go, oh, I can't wait. This is so cool. All right. So 10 ways not to worry about hackers. And so basically what you're doing here is saying these are excuses that we will often use and say, well, I'm doing everything okay because I'm doing this. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll read the statement and then you respond as to, as you say, demolish each one rather easily. Number one, I leave my computer as it was when I took it out of the box. I didn't install new software. I don't allow automatic updates. I don't open email from people I don't know. I don't connect to Wi-Fi networks and don't connect thumb drives.
Those are things we're told. Well, some of those things we're told to do.
Yes.
There's one in there that's the really bad thing if you do it.
Yes.
And do you want to guess which one that is?
Taking it out of the box? No. I would think automatic updates, but I don't know.
Well, not installing new software and not allowing automatic updates.
Okay. Go ahead.
And the reason for this, and this is one of the things that I find scary. There's something, have you heard of zero-day failures?
No. Well, I did because I looked at your thing. But before that, no, I have not.
The zero-day vulnerabilities and zero-day failures are actually rather interesting. The problem with this is it's sort of a terrifying, very important, serious issue, but parts of it are really fascinating. And what they are they're not, they refer, the phrase zero day refers not to the type of failure. It's not a calculational failure, like a divide by zero or some computation that goes wrong. It's a failure that goes wrong or can go wrong under some circumstances. But the zero day comes into the picture because it is something that has been discovered by people who have been doing testing or have been looking for these possible problems that make software vulnerable when you enter in certain types of data. And the zero day is that people don't know about it. Only a limited number of people know about the potential failure, which means that from the time that the potential failure is discovered by a researcher or a bad guy,
right,
or both, from the time the vulnerability is discovered until the time it is fixed, it's a zero-day vulnerability because anyone can use it at that point to break into a network or crash a system or whatever. Does that make sense?
So the way I'm taking that, what you just said is once you've discovered it, it's too late.
Once you have discovered it and it has been fixed with an update, and this is where the issue is, people, the vendors and researchers are looking for zero-day vulnerabilities that have not yet been found. Some people on the one side are saying, aha, I found this vulnerability, and if I do this, 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 and this, I will be able to gain access to a restricted network, and they can sell them on the black market for over $100,000. So that's one part of zero-day vulnerabilities. It's how to make money from zero-day vulnerabilities. The other part of it is that if the vendors are looking for that because they want to patch them and issue updates, and if you say, I am not going to update my software at all, then you're running software with tons of these zero-day vulnerabilities,
right,
that have been patched by vendors with software that you have not updated.
So basically you're running around with a disease that you can cure.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, very good. That's a good. That's why you,
I try. Okay. Two. I have a Mac. You're a Mac guy. I'm a Mac guy. You think, oh, okay, we're invincible.
Well, people haven't been breaking into Macintosh computers for a long time because it's quite simple. It's Willie Sutton's idea. Why does he rob banks? That's where the money is.
Right.
The Mac market was too small for people to care about. They tried to break into Windows machines because that's where most of the people were. As the Macintosh universe has expanded, we see more attempts to break into it. So no longer, as Mac becomes more used in large corporations and by more people, it becomes a more enticing target.
Now, see, I always thought it was because they were better at, like, just because the system was different, that they had better safeguards.
Yes, in some ways, and on the mobile devices, it's generally accepted that some people say the Apple world of apps is a very closed system.
Yeah.
You can't get something onto the App Store unless it goes through a review process at Apple. And some people say that is terrible because it's total control and we don't have the flexibility and freedom that you have on the Android side.
If only there was a guy writing books about how to do it.
But the thing is that Apple is able to protect the apps that you download from the App Store, but vulnerabilities still get through.
Which is also why they regularly update and
yes.
and so forth. Of those who simply say, look, I have my phone, I have my, that's enough for me, I don't need a computer. I've got this little thing right in my pocket. Why do I need a computer?
Well, it is a computer.
That's
an easy one.
It's all the same stuff,
yeah.
Right? Okay. I have nothing to hide. Why would anyone, or the alternative to that, why would anybody care about me? Why would anybody care about what I have on this machine I have in front of me?
Well, this goes back to the distinction between the four types of cyber damage. Some of it is espionage. Sometimes people want your data. But there's a lot of people out there that, forgive me for saying this, don't give a hoot about Joe Donahue's data.
Right.
Interesting, though, it may be. But they would very much like to break into your devices and use them as things like bots, short for robots, so they can hijack it and send email through your account without your knowing it, so that they can send spam that way, and also so that they can use the network of hijacked computers to launch cyber attacks of one sort or another without looking at your data. They just want your connectivity.
Now, what and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems to me that probably most of us who are somewhat regular computer users, email users, have seen a friend's name pop up and say, oh, Margie is writing me, isn't that nice? And then realize that it's some gobbledygook and that Margie obviously has had some sort of issue with their computer.
Yeah, I know Margie, and it's really a shame about her.
But it's becoming more and more common where we see these things where they're obviously in the address book, and it's going out, and you maybe get the same email from a bunch of different people.
Yeah, and these are often called phishing attacks,
yes.
P-H-I-S-H. And think they either they may want your data, but they may want access to your networks and the data to which you have access. It depends what they're doing. But you sort of have, I think all of us know some people like Margie who are periodically sending out these emails, and you can tell that they're spam and they're
right.
hacks. And I know I have a TED. When I get an email from TED, I know, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's nothing that you need to look at that
yeah.
moment. You also include in here, and this may initially come off as somewhat of a lame excuse, but it's certainly a realistic one, and that is, especially for nonprofits, but for overall organizations, maybe smaller organizations, that say, look, we can't even keep our website updated. I mean, look at it. The last thing on there was posted in 2007. You expect us to have somebody who is going to address these issues?
And this is part of why I'm scared, because not terribly scared, but it's, I mean, I've got
You'll get over it,
more important issues. But It for many people, this is too low on the list of priorities.
Yeah.
And people say, you know, the data is so important. Who cares about the data for this little museum or this library or whatever? But the fact is, a lot of the time, people are not after the data. They're after the connectivity. And when you find that this computer is connected to that computer and this network and that network and goes down, so the weakest link in that entire chain is the vulnerable link, the most vulnerable link.
I just want to interrupt the list for a second because it you know, you're talking about what scares us, and there just seems to be this overall attitude that it's what I see when we have these conversations about whether it be Sony or any other cyber attack, the president putting out the legislation or the plan of working together and trying to shore up both government and corporate mistakes and issues and vulnerabilities, is that we sort of give up and just say, well, if look, they're going to get it. If they want it, they're going to get it.
That's true.
We seem to have like thrown our hands up in some cases.
And also, I think it seems to me that a lot of the futility comes from the fact that people don't realize that they're not after your data in many cases. If you are a CEO, they are after your data usually. But they are after your connectivity.
Yeah.
The access that, you know, you can type in something and you can send an email message, which means somehow the password to your email server is there. It should be encrypted. Maybe it isn't. Not everyone uses encryption on email outgoing. So those are the things. So people say, who cares about my data? And that may be true, but they care about the connectivity.
And if you can get the connectivity and like a bitchy note from a Sony executive about Jennifer Aniston, will then score.
Yes.
Right. That's a double duty. All right.
Yes, and some people, not me because it's unkind, if you can get invaluable publicity for what apparently is a terrible movie, that's even
bigger
score.
That's even better. Yeah, score. We have another one. We'll go back to the list here. We have a firewall and antivirus software, so it's if something happens, we'll catch it right away. And this gets back to your point about the updating.
The updating, and it also gets back to the fact about the wanting the access. And a lot of the cyber crime and cyber problems that are going on are not a matter of getting data, not a matter of getting the data from your computer. It's putting malware, evil software, onto your computer. So that is software that sits on your computer. You can't even see it. And it will run and turn your computer possibly into a bot so it can be sending spam. It can take instructions from far away and do something like relay a message. And if you look at some of the, Kim Zetter's book, Countdown to Zero Day, there are some servers in Southeastern Asia that keep popping up on the list of being involved in some of these cyber warfare and cyber espionage exploits, and it's because they are not secured. And so they are involved because this is an international web that we're dealing with. They're involved in cyber espionage in the Middle East, run by other countries in Europe or the Americas, and they're going through servers perhaps in Southeast Asia. So it's not taking the data, but installing data that you can't see, installing software you can't see. That's the big danger.
We have about 4 minutes and four more of these to go. So I'll just go, we'll tick through them quickly. And a lot of them we've sort of discussed already. But one of them on the list is our mission is to serve the public. Hey, you want the public to use it, so you don't want to make it too restrictive.
That's a problem.
Because you want them to get the information, but you don't want the bad guys to get the information.
Yeah. And it's a matter of going back and using all the security mechanisms you can.
The other one being the Wi-Fi network name, that's hidden. You need a password to get in. You were talking about connectivity. So you make it harder.
What I've been told is that, and it sort of makes sense, hiding Wi-Fi network names doesn't really help. It just slows down the network.
All right.
I've heard that. I haven't tested firsthand.
But it seems like it would be true. Like, yeah. you know, you're
it's
hiding
something
the
that
keys.
Might make you feel better.
Yeah.
May not be correct.
One of the other ones being, I never answer email messages that request personal information, which is, you know.
But they're getting better and better.
Seems common sense.
I mean, your friend Marge is yeah. using old-fashioned techniques.
But we still give the information when we order our shoes from a company, right?
But that's the situation. If you've initiated the contact, that's why
different.
These phishing things that purport to come from friends are so dangerous. The more precise the request for information is, the more likely it is to be accurate. If someone sends you an email and says, what was the name of that restaurant you mentioned when I saw you on 33rd Street last week? That probably either reflects a legitimate request or it may request a very sophisticated phishing attempt.
So
where they've looked in your date book and saw where you were when.
Again, I know we're running short on time, but I do have a just I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but when I ask the question of, all right, with what you just said in mind, if I go and I go onto a site that may be, you know, clothing, what's that? Okay, L.L. Bean. Okay, so I go on and I order shoes because I can get them in my size, and because they're one of the few places that I can get size 15 boots, so I order them. And then 2 seconds later, I start getting all of the ads for the things about, you know, oh, big-footed person, you can get your shoes here. Now, that seems, isn't that some sort of phishing? Isn't that some sort of security? Like, how do they know? Do you know what I mean? Is that what we're talking about? Because it's creepy.
If it's done right, it's not creepy. But this is usually not phishing. This is usually ad networks at work.
All right.
And that's another topic, to how to opt out of ad networks.
Okay. All right. We'll get it. We'll do that. That'll be our sequel to this. And and then finally, this is a normal risk of today's life, just like getting hit by a bus when you cross the street. It's rare, but it can happen.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't do anything.
Because if we don't, collectively, we're all in this together,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Your point about illness is quite the same. If no one gets vaccinated, we'll all get sick.
Right. Well, it's a really interesting topic, and Jesse's done a lot of great work here. Wonderful book titles that you can read more about it, a review and articles that he has up on his website. We have the link on our site, wamc.org/roundtable, or you can go right to Jesse's site, which is northcountryconsulting.com. Jesse Feiler provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits. Again, northcountryconsulting.com. Jesse, it's always a great pleasure to have you with us. Thank you very much.
Good to be here.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.